You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. Guys, great to have you with me. Just like the disc jockeys of days gone by, and I know you at home are saying, what's a disc jockey? It's time to unveil our revised top 100 and new top 30s if you don't have the time for the top 100. Jonathan?
Yeah, well, we worked our butts off, I should say. That's a technical term there, but to
an industry term.
To an industry, that's an insider scouting term. To re-rank all of the lists, the top 100 overall, the top 30s for all 30 teams. And, you know, the key part being one, ranking, you know, changing the rankings based on, you know, performance and things of that nature, but also folding in guys from the 2015 draft, a bunch of the team lists, some of the international guys who just signed July 2nd were added in. The one thing that didn't change is the guy at the very top. Byron Buxton is still the number one prospect. You know, I'm sure some people are curious about that more than anything else. But as Jim and I like to say, and Jim, you know, I'll let you weigh in on it just in terms of who Byron Buxton still is. You can't look past the tools. That's what Jim always says.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the tools are still the tools. I mean, you talk to scouts. It's the best tool set to come through the minor league since Mike Trout. It's actually, you know, potential Mike Trout with more arm strength, although that's probably the least important of the five tools. But on the 20-80 scouting scale, Buxton still looks like he's a 70 hitter with 60 power as his worst tool. That means he's going to hit 20 plus home runs, 80 runner, 70 defender. You might even be better than that. 70 arm, and you know, Jonathan and I have talked about this at length too. I mean, the thing I think people hold against a little bit. Oh, he only hit 189 and 37 big league at bats. The guy's 21 years old. He missed most of last season with injuries. So it's like the guy has rushed through the minors. And, you know, if this guy was coming out of college, he would have been the number one overall pick in this year's draft and probably starting in short season or low A ball, to be honest with you. So I just think he maybe pales in comparison a little bit when people saw the immediate impact guys like Chris Bryant and Carlos Correa had. But, you know, getting back to, I think, the first thing I said, the tools are still the tools. And Byron Buxton's, you know, potential and upside and ability, none of that has changed.
Of course, he's been the number one pick, you know, number one guy on our board, it seems like forever. So Jim actually had that first part about the tools recorded. He just pressed play. It was like a playback button that he has. So I guess the other thing that's always fun is see the guys who make the biggest leaps. We can do a shameless plug. We actually did a top 50 prospect show for the network that's going to air on Sunday night. And, you know, we talked about guys. We did separate segments on guys who made the largest leaps. Jim, is there a guy of those guys who made, you know, big jumps up that, you know, are particular favorites of yours?
I think two of the pitchers are Alex Reyes of the Cardinals. You know, just he's a guy who has made so much progress in about 2 years. You know, began last year, 2014, as kind of this live-armed kid who was kind of wild in low Class A, and now he's already reached Double A, and he can hit 100 miles an hour with his fastball, and his curveball is really nasty. And at least with Reyes, I mean, this guy was touted when he signed. You know, he signed for $950,000 out of the Dominican Republic after actually leaving New Jersey when would have been his high school senior year and going to Dominican to move to paid off. I think the guy who's maybe the biggest rags to riches story for me is Jose De Leon with the Dodgers. This guy was a 24th round pick in 2013 out of Southern University, signed for $35,000, had almost a 7 ERA in his pro debut. So, I mean, it wasn't like he came in to 2014 really on anybody's radar. You know, went to the rookie-level Pioneer League, was pitcher of the year there, I believe. And then he went to low Class A at the end of last year, and it had crazy numbers. He struck out almost two guys an inning, struck out 14 in one game to break Clayton Kershaw's franchise record. So he was an interesting guy coming in, and we didn't put him on the preseason top 100. And I do the Dodgers. So, I mean, I probably am more to blame if anybody wants to blame us for that. And, you know, kind of I think we both, Jonathan, had kind of a little, let's see what this guy does over a longer period of time. And He's been just as unhittable. Already reached Double A. He's averaging about 14 strikeouts per nine innings this year. Throwing a lot of strikes. He's got three plus pitches at times. Mid-90s fastball is his best offering. And you know, it's funny. We came into the year talking about how the Dodgers had this big three of prospects, maybe the best trio of prospects of any club, with Corey Seager and Julio Urias, who are still very high on our list, and Jock Peterson, who might be the National League Rookie of the Year. And they still have one of the best big threes, and it might be the best big three of any team. And now Jose De Leon's the third guy in that big three.
I guess we have to thank the Dodgers then for not promoting Corey Seager, so we can still say that. I'll throw out Orlando Arcia as one of my favorites. He jumped up 74 spots from where he was. The Brewers shortstop, people got a chance to see him a little bit in the Futures game. His older brother, Osvaldo, also is a pretty talented player. But Arcia is a guy who can really play up the middle. He'll stay at shortstop, and the bat has really come along, and that's why he's jumped so much. And then I guess we should give out a little shout-out to, we call him a friend of the program, Blake Snell, since he joined us on the podcast.
Yes, we do. He's one of our favorites.
He was not rated at the start of the year, and then he obviously reeled off that with whatever 49 straight scoreless innings. He's moved up some levels. And has continued to throw extremely well. So it's not like he's hit a roadblock or slowed down because he's moved to more advanced levels. And he's probably going to be ready to, I would think, impact Tampa's rotation next year at some point.
The much-touted Luis Severino is making his long-awaited first Major League start for the New York Yankees. And he's just one of many call-ups this past week to fortify pitching staffs around the majors. Our Nostradamuses, plural, now predict who may be best down the stretch, Jonathan.
Nostradamus.
Maybe it is Nostradamus.
It might be.
Yeah.
I have to predict who's going to be the best long term. Is that what you're saying?
Or well, like no, right down out the stretch. Of the gate? No, down the stretch this season.
Down the stretch this season. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we had John Gray and Henry Owens make their major league debuts on Tuesday with mixed results. I guess would be the kindest way to put it. Gray got hit a little bit. Owens was actually really good through five and then fell apart a little bit in the sixth. And then the bullpen didn't do him any favors. I mean, I think Severino is the guy who, stuff-wise, has the ability to be more dominant the rest of the way. And probably... Gray has really good frontline starter stuff. Also, Owens is more of a deception, change speeds kind of guy. He's 6'6". He uses his levers really well. But, I mean, I think Severino, just because he's got, you know, a fastball that touches the upper 90s, he's got a plus change up. Slider has come a long way. That's at least major league average. And he throws a lot of strikes with, you know, above average to plus stuff. He's the guy I think has the chance to have the greatest impact. And then also keep in mind that he is the one of the three of these pitchers who's pitching in a playoff race. So that can sort of impact things a bit as well.
Jim, in a generation a long time ago, I remember when Mel Stottlemyre came up to the New York Yankees from their AAA club in Richmond in 1964. He went 9-3, and the Yankees didn't get to the World Series without him. Your thoughts about who may have the most positive effect down the stretch?
I think it's Severino. I think what Jonathan was saying is you know, his stuff is at least as good as any of those three guys, and he's got the best control and command, so I think he's the best position to come in and succeed right away. The Yankees took a lot of heat, I think, over the trade deadline for not going out and making a major move for a starter because they didn't want to give up Severino or they didn't want to give up Aaron Judge, the outfielder, in a trade, and I kind of like what they did. They still, you know, have the opportunity, and there's going to be guys that could probably go out and get in August, once they clear waivers. But, you know, rather than, you know, raid their farm system, I like the idea, you know, Luis Severino, you know, without having to give up three or four prospects to go get a guy, you know, why not promote your potential ace in the making, Luis Severino, who's dominated Double A and Triple A this year as a 21-year-old, and see what he can do. And if he doesn't work out, then maybe you make an August trade.
You know, the crazy thing is, the beginning of the 2014 season was not that long ago. Luis Severino was in the Class A South Atlantic League. And he's one of these cases where he wasn't rushed to the big leagues. If anything, people have been clamoring for him. You know how New York can get. I mean, you saw it with Michael Conforto among Mets fans, and I mean, they always want that guy to get there. He just pitched his way, to the big leagues. There are certain guys that just do that. Doesn't matter how cautious you want to be. You don't want to push him too early, but he went from the South Atlantic League to Double A last year. Went to Double A, was there for 8 starts, and then was even better in Triple A. So I mean, there was nothing really left for him to do at the minor league level. So it kind of, I think, ended up being a perfect storm for him, where the Yankees needed some help, especially because of injuries, and he was ready to show what he can do. If he falters a little bit, there's no harm in that. He's still only 21, and he gets very high marks for his makeup. So I think he's the kind of kid who, if he experiences some failure at the big league level, it's not going to crush him.
To get, you have to give. And leading up to the trade deadline, some clubs, not the Yankees, were forced to part with prospects that were rated in their top 10. Guys, run down who's doing what. Jim?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think the guy who made the biggest impression right off the bat was Daniel Norris, the key player in the David Price trade. Made a big league start almost immediately for the Tigers, gave up 1 run in 7 1/3 innings, and I think the most positive sign for him was that he only walked 1. I mean, that was kind of issue for the Blue Jays. He was up in the rotation in April. They sent him to AAA to work on his control and his command. And while he pitched okay, that was still something that he really needed to work on. And so far, so good after one start in the Tigers uniform.
Yeah, and I'll go with Jose Peraza, who the Dodgers somehow managed to get from the Atlanta Braves with all the help that they got at the big league level in that 3-team trade. They also got the best prospect in that deal, in Peraza. Who's in AAA, he's young, he's been playing second base, but he might have the ability to play shortstop if you needed him to. Obviously, the Dodgers have Corey Seager, where he ends up, long-term remains to be seen. But I don't know if Peraza just wants to prove to the Braves that, boy, you shouldn't have traded me. Obviously, these are all small sample size, but he's got 9-for-18 over his first handful of games at Oklahoma City in the Pacific Coast League. 2 doubles and a homer, and this is a guy who he's not a power guy, so I 4 runs batted in a stolen base. He's been really dynamic. And it wouldn't surprise me if they called him up in September as a guy who could fill in defensively at second or short, although he's not played shortstop this year. So I don't know if you want to throw him out there in a playoff race, but he could pinch hit. He can pinch run. He's sort of an interesting guy. So he's probably the hitter of the top 100 prospects who got traded who's really stood out. And I guess we should give a shout out to Jacoby Jones, and the Pirates sent for Joaquin Soria, who in his third game with the Tigers in AA had a 3-homer game.
Wow.
And he does have power potential, power and speed, just a lot of swing and miss.
Jim, who else?
I think looking at the three guys the Phillies got, or the three main guys the Phillies got in the Cole Hamels trade, Jake Thompson came out and gave up 1 run, 7 innings in his first Double-A start. I think you can see him in Philadelphia fairly soon. Nick Williams, who's got maybe the quickest bat in the minor leagues, 2-for-5 in his first game in Double-A. And the third top 100 guy in that trade, it'll be a while before he plays. Jorge Alfaro probably not going to play again this season after ankle surgery.
We have a couple guys still there. I mean, Rob Kaminsky, who the Indians stole from the Cardinals for Brandon Moss. That was a great trade for Cleveland. Jim and I are in agreement with that. People should go check out Jim's analysis of that trade. He's pitching. He's making his debut with Lynchburg in the Carolina League on Thursday. And then Kiri Mella, who went from the Giants to the Reds, debuts Wednesday night in the Florida State League for Daytona. So a couple guys who will take the mound pretty soon. I'm a big Rob Kaminsky fan. And I think that he's the kind of guy, even though he was a high school guy, he could start moving pretty quickly.
Mm. Jim, whose system was most replenished?
I think a couple teams jump out. I mean, I think the Phillies, for one. I mean, the Phillies got the three top 100 prospects I mentioned in Jake Thompson, and Nick Williams, and Jorge Alfaro. So I think they're one that jumps out right away. I mean, they made a couple other minor trades, too. I think the Brewers, beefed up their system some by getting Brett Phillips and Domingo Santana as the key players in their Carlos Gomez, Mike Fiers trade with Houston. I also like the fact that they got Jake Davies from the Orioles as well for Gerardo Parra. I like those guys too. And Oakland didn't make a big splash, I think, with any one trade, but they did add some interesting guys. They got Sean Manaea from the Royals in the Ben Zobrist trade. They got Jacob Nottingham, who's really raised his profile this year, from the Astros in the Scott Kazmir trade. And and Casey Meisner came over from the Mets in the Tyler Clipper trade. So that's another team I think that really helped their farm system.
Yeah, I keep looking at the Brewers, and I mean that's one of my lists. So and going back to even maybe the 2014 draft. I mean, this was an organization whose system was depleted. There wasn't a lot there. Orlando Arcia was kind of far away, and maybe they have one guy on the top 100, and if that, and they added some high-end talent in the draft, some of whom haven't really performed, but I like what they did there. And then some guys have stepped up and performed better. Arcia is now one of the better shortstop prospects in baseball, and then they added a whole bunch of talent with the trades they made, and not just the high-end guys, but up and down their top 30. They've got a lot of new names on that list. And suddenly, they were one of those organizations where trying to round out the 30 was challenging. That 25 to 30 on a lot of teams, it's tough to find guys that you can be excited about. Now you look at that top 30, and there are guys at the back end that are like, oh, you know what, that guy's pretty good. He's got a chance. So I think, that they're the ones that stand out to me.
Jim, the other side of the coin before we go, whose system was most diminished?
Well, I don't know if there's one that jumps out to me as diminished, because the guys we just mentioned, Houston gave up some good players. The Rangers gave up a lot of good players. But those were both deep systems to begin with. So I guess in one way you could say they've been diminished. I mean, I guess the most obvious one would be the Blue Jays. They traded, 11 or 12 maybe top 30 prospects. I lost track. It seemed like I kept replacing them. So it would probably be the Blue Jays. Some of those other teams still retained their depth, but with the Blue Jays, they gave up a lot to go out and get Price and Tulowitzki and Ben Revere, and I'm forgetting a fourth player because I know they added a fourth player too. I've lost track of who it was, but the Blue Jays, I think, are the obvious answer there.
And to Jim's point, Jonathan, that seems to be one of the few organizations that doesn't hoard their prospects, that they're here, have them, we got to go for it in 2015.
Yeah, they really went all in, and I think Jim makes a good point, because listen, the Astros gave up some talent also, but their system was deeper than the Blue Jays going into it. So yes, they gave up some good players, but they still have some good players left. The Blue Jays really, they think nuclear winter is coming. They cleaned out the cupboards and made sure they're going all in. And so, who's left on that list now? There's not nearly as much in there. And they let some of those guys come up. They've traded a lot of young players over the years. Obviously, Noah Syndergaard came from the Blue Jays once upon a time. But Daniel Norris and Aaron Sanchez kind of came up together. And I wonder if Daniel Norris had done what they had hoped. I actually thought they pulled the plug on him and sent him down more quickly than they should have early in the year. His command has always been an issue for him. He was still getting big league hitters out. I would have stuck with him a little longer. If he had figured things out at the big league level, I wonder if the trade deadline would have looked any different, because maybe they wouldn't have wanted to part with him. I'm sure it was still difficult, but they clearly were in a, we need to win right now, and Daniel Norris might help us win next year. A couple of years from now, and both Jim and I have said something similar, say 3-4 years down the line, Daniel Norris might be David Price. So it'll be interesting to see what the, you can do this with trades over the years, prospects who get traded. Noah Syndergaard was an A-ball when he was traded to the Mets, and look at him now. So we'll have to wait and see what happens on those flip sides of those trades.
And a quick reaction before we go. The stunning news yesterday, Jim, of Dave Dombrowski leaving the Detroit Tigers organization. He is the face of the organization, including everything beneath Detroit. Your reaction?
Yeah, I don't know how stunning it was. I mean, it was rumored that that could happen. I mean, I guess there was some surprise in that. You know, he executed the David Price and Yoenis Cespedes trades, and so some thought he might stick around later. But it was, you know, kind of rumored that, you know, that there might be changes in the making. I mean, I think Dave Dombrowski's got a case perhaps one day to make the Hall of Fame. I mean, he's got a great track record as a GM, won a championship with the Marlins, took, you know, built World Series team in Detroit, built a World Series caliber team in Montreal that didn't get to, you know, go all the way because of the strike. I wouldn't be surprised if he winds up running another team in the near future. I mean, his track record is about as good as anyone. If you look at wins and losses on the field, if you look at transactions they've made, you know, trades he's made, he's got a tremendous track record.
Yeah, I think the only surprise was just the timing of it. It was like they decided, you know, the pendulum in Detroit seemed to be swinging back and forth between, are we in it, are we not? Are we buying, are we selling? And then they decided, okay, we're going to sell. He executed the trades and I think got pretty good return for, you know, considering the guys he traded were our rentals. And then he was let go. You know, obviously it wasn't as a result of those trades, but that was sort of his parting move, the results of which, the benefits of which the Tigers won't necessarily feel outside of Daniel Norris for a little time. But I can guarantee you that to any other general manager in baseball who felt that they might have been on the hot seat, that seat got a little bit hotter now that Dave Dombrowski is on the free agent market.
What about the state of the organization beneath Detroit? Does he leave it in good shape?
Well, I mean, it's not a deep system, but you know the Price and Cespedes trades brought in a good amount of talent, so now they're. There's more there than there was, you know, but Stephen Moya was the only guy who had been on the top 100 list, and they actually, prior to adding Daniel Norris, didn't have a guy in the top 100. So It's not the strongest system, but they were always built to compete and win, you know, at the major league level, and he did that annually in Detroit. Every year they were pretty much in it. So it's hard to fault a general manager for a farm system not being overly strong when he used the pieces he had. You know, as people have pointed out to me with them and some other organizations, all right, people don't think we have that strong of a farm system, but people keep answering the phone and trading for our guys in our minor league system. So, it, you know, it was working. You know, he used what he had and built a team that annually was competing for a division title.
Closing thoughts,
yeah, we
Jim?
We kept hearing, you know, Mike Ilitch was trying, you know, wants to win a World Series. You know, he's getting older, wanted to win a World Series. So they were, you know, I think David Dombrowski, in terms of the state of the farm system, like Jonathan was saying, was simply following the mandate he was given, which was win now. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, I think what they did that was smart, as opposed to what the Phillies have done, and now the Phillies are in the world hurt, is Phillies were in it to win it, to win it, to win it, year after year after year. And then they didn't see the writing on the wall, and they kept a team that got older and older and older, and the farm system fell apart because they weren't drafting well. And now the Phillies have a lot of work to do. I think by going ahead and making the Price and Cespedes trades, by having some interesting players draft in the last couple drafts, the Tigers may not – you know, the Tigers are going to have to rebuild, but I don't think it'll have to be as harsh as it is in Philadelphia right now.
Jim, great to have you back. Jonathan, great to see you. And I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.